This is Talk Nerdy to Me. I am your host, Troy Stegner, and I have everybody's favorite Blue Ranger here on the line, David Yost. Welcome, David.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
Not bad, not bad. How about yourself?
Very good. It's a busy day, but it's a good day.
Yes, we'd like to thank you in advance for taking the time to talk to us and answer some of our silly questions.
Obviously not a problem.
Okay, so everybody knows you played Billy Cranston in the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and you were really one of the characters that was in almost every episode, I think maybe even every episode besides Alpha 5. So you've got a little bit of history there with the Rangers.
No, I was just going to say, yes, that's true. I'm the only original actor to air in 200 episodes consecutively. Without missing an episode.
And never changing color.
And never changing color, being replaced. That's right.
Right, and I don't think you ever gave your coin up either.
Never gave my power away, nope.
So that's a claim to fame right there. So how did you come about to audition for the Power Rangers? What was the process behind that? Because I know there were thousands and thousands of people that wanted to be on that show.
Well, when I first auditioned for the show, it was actually called Phantom, and I just saw a open casting call in a paper here in Los Angeles called Backstage West, which has a bunch of open casting calls going on in the city. And, you know, I originally went in and read for the role of Victor, which was the Red Ranger at that time. And then as the series got picked up, it was changed to Jason, but I read for the role of Victor, and I had three auditions for that role, and I knew I wasn't going to get it by the third audition, so I asked the casting director and producers to let me read for the role of Billy, and they said, no, you know, we have all these other guys over here, and you know, that's kind of the look we're going for. That's, we don't see you as Billy. And I said, please let me read for it. I know I can do it. And they told me no, and so I had to think really quick on my feet, and I borrowed somebody's glasses, and I went in the bathroom, and I wet my hair down, and I borrowed somebody else's button-up shirt and buttoned it crooked, and I just came back, and I said, please, I know I can do this. Will you let me read for the role? And they did.
You went into this. You didn't really have any martial arts background. You were more gymnastics. In fact, you were pretty well accomplished in gymnastics. So but you later on took some self-defense classes. How did the martial or the gymnastics lend itself to a lot of the stunts you did on the set?
Well, obviously being a gymnast, we're able to pick up choreography very easily. And so, you know, all of our fight scenes are, you know, choreographed. And so that definitely helped me. But obviously, you know, the producers were trying to cast actors that had either martial arts, dance, or gymnastics background so that it would look more natural, you know, when we're doing our own stunts and then we morph and we become the Power Rangers, you know, the people that are in costume from the Japanese footage were flipping around and doing kicks, and so they wanted to make sure that we as actors could do that as well. And so obviously being a gymnast helped.
And I know originally it was a pretty low budget, so you guys ended up having to do a lot of your own stunts. Did that ever become a problem? Did you ever get hurt doing your own stunts?
I would say none of the actors really ever got hurt doing our own stunts, just because we had a really good stunt team, and again, everything was choreographed, and because we were all, you know, pretty well educated in our sport, whether it be martial arts, gymnast, or gymnastics, or a dance, or whatever, we were able to pick things up relatively easy. But yeah, we were low budget, so we had to go out there and do everything on our own, which was great. But we would show up to set, and basically they would be like, okay, you have a fight scene today. You have 15 minutes, go figure it out, go work it out with the stunt team, and then we're going to shoot. So, you know, often the fights that you see us doing on our own were made up and choreographed and shot within 15 minutes, and then we would move on to the next thing. So it was, you know, difficult at times, but in the end, we're really lucky nobody got hurt.
That gives everybody a whole new appreciation for what you guys did on there.
Especially in the first season, you know, we really had to do a lot of our own stunts. And then as the show became more popular, we were able to, you know, our stunt team, they brought more people in, and it got easier for us, I guess, in some ways.
The Power Rangers became a hit. I mean, pretty much right out of the gate, so much so that you guys had a lot of celebrities that would stop by on the set just to check you guys out. Do you have a favorite celebrity that you met on set?
I mean, there were so many. I mean, I guess the one that sticks out with me the most, and probably wouldn't maybe be considered celebrity per se, but, you know, the O.J. Simpson trial was going on at the time, and Marcia Clark, who, you know, was the opposing counsel during that trial, she came to set with her kids while the trial was going on, and we were the first ones. I mean, I don't know if people remember, but she had changed her hairdo in the middle of the trial, and we were like sort of the first people that got to see her with the new hairdo. So I just kind of always remember that and just think, because there was just so much going on at that time around that trial, that was pretty neat that she got to come and bring her kids to set. But I mean, I'm just, Eric Estrada came. I had the head of production from Spelling Television, who was doing 90210 in Melrose Place at the time. I had them come and visit the set. So, I don't know, we had a lot of really neat people get to come through and bring their kids. So it was a lot of fun for us as well.
I know Bryan Cranston, from Breaking Bad fame, of course, voiced two of the villains. Did you guys ever get to meet him, or did he do the voice work offset?
Yeah, I mean, typically the voiceover department is in a completely different building. It was in a city called Burbank, and we filmed at different times, once in Culver City for a while, and then we moved to a city called Valencia. So at either time, where they did the voiceover stuff, it was not located where we filmed. So I don't ever remember meeting Mr. Cranston per se. It doesn't mean that I didn't, but I don't remember him coming to set. He was just an actor that Saban Entertainment used a lot of at the time in their voiceover department. It was a good gig for certain actors, you know, just to get to come in, because Saban Entertainment did so many cartoons as well. And so, you know, he had a good reputation there. And that's why my character, I guess I learned later on, was named after Bryan Cranston. That's why I'm Billy Cranston.
That was going to be my next question. I was leading into that. So you can confirm that that's why Billy's last name is Cranston?
That is why that is why Billy's last name is Cranston, because it's just like Tommy Oliver is actually named after Tony Oliver. And Tony Oliver was a voiceover director at Saban Entertainment. He was involved in the beginnings of Power Rangers. And so Tommy Oliver is named after Tony Oliver. So that's sort of how that one worked out, too.
Wow. So anybody playing 6 Degrees of Separation, that's how you connect David Yost to Breaking Bad.
Sure.
Do you have a favorite episode of the Power Rangers from the 200 you were in?
I mean, I think most of the first season was probably the most fun that I had as an actor and as we had as a cast together. So, I mean, as a cast as a whole, I would say the food fight episode where we fought a monster called Pudgy Pig is probably one of my more favorite episodes, because we get to have an actual food fight on set. And got to involve the crew in it in some ways, so that was fun. And then there's an episode called Power Ranger Punks, where Amy Jo Johnson, who played Kimberly, and myself as Billy, our characters, kind of became the bullies of the school. So that was sort of fun to divert from our normal characters and get to play those characters. And then my third favorite would be Switching Places, where Billy and Kimberly actually switch personalities. That was one of the first scripts written, and we got to spend a lot of time rehearsing that one before we filmed it, because we rehearsed for a month prior to starting filming the episode. So we would doing martial arts training or physical training, and also doing some acting training. And that was one of the first scripts that was written. So Amy Jo and I really got to spend a lot of time working on switching our characters around. So that was a lot of fun to do.
There's been rumors here and there about the remaining original cast getting back together to do something for Netflix. Is that still something that's being talked about?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a rumor, and it's probably a rumor on my end, but, you know, I just think it would be great because we're creeping up on our 30-year anniversary of the original cast, and, I mean, for years we've been asked to do a reunion, and nothing's happened. They didn't take advantage of it at the 25-year reunion, which I don't know why they didn't, but, you know, so it'd be nice to film some kind of a limited series, maybe 7 episodes or 8 episodes for Netflix, and you know, sort of spend time with each character and see where those characters are, and just have like maybe 2 episodes where, you know, the first episode and the last episode sort of involves everybody together, but the in-between episodes can sort of dive off into each character and see where they're at and what they're up to.
Do you still wear a lot of blue clothes, or is that something you try to avoid now?
There's certainly been times in my life where I didn't want to wear blue, or I tried not to wear blue. Like today, I'm wearing black, so I'm okay. But I will say that I do try to, you know, weed the color blue out of my wardrobe to a degree, but it always seems to creep back in, and it becomes sort of like my staple. But I wore a lot of blue before I became the Blue Ranger, and so I still wear blue quite often because it's a good color for me. I mean, some people say, oh my gosh, you're such a tool. you wear blue so people recognize you. And I'm like, no, that's really not my thought process behind wearing blue. But I don't know. It's kind of funny, but I embrace it on every level.
Do you put the spandex back on very often, or is that something you've
given up? I don't ever want or need to do that. I've only done it once since I've left the show, so we'll see.
When you got the show, you moved on to a job where you were basically selling TV show ideas to networks. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Depends on what job we're talking about, but I mean, there was a point where I had a stint at the Sci-Fi Channel where I took over for a woman who left for maternity leave, whatever, and I became the director of production and administration at the Sci-Fi Lab, and so I was sort of in charge of their development think tank, and we were creating, you know, basically just in-house ideas, generating ideas for the Sci-Fi Channel, and we'd go out and film the pilots and, you know, try to get the network to pick those up. And one of the ones that I was involved with was Scare Tactics, which went on and aired, I don't know, for quite a while. Shannon Doherty was the host of that. But we filmed a lot of stuff that was so good that never got picked up, and I could never understand, what that was about. But that's part of being in the industry. And then I also used to sell Japanese anime to U.S. networks here in the United States. So we would, you know, get the anime from Japan. We would put American voices over it, and then I would sell those to networks. I was really I got a lot on Cartoon Network. Like Trigun was one of my favorites that I sold to Cartoon Network, and I had a few shows on Showtime and MTV, so I was really proud of those. That's when we first really started to really see anime make a real appearance in the United States and be airing on networks. And there used to be a network called G4 and Tech TV, whatever, and I did several deals with them as well. So, I don't know, that was a fun job, and I also sold the rights to those shows on a worldwide level. So often, at least twice a year, I would go to France to what we call MIPTV and MIPCOM, and I would sell the rights to basically Europe, Australia, Latin America. So that was a lot of fun to get to go to France and sell the licensing rights for those shows in those countries.
Are some of those things that you thought really good still out there not being produced?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, the two that really stuck out to me, and I always try to figure out if I'm going to get in trouble, because we have to sign non-disclosure agreements, you know, and if we talk about properties and all that, I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on that, but I'll just try to speak about it like in a general term. There was one called Alien Hunter, and basically it was like Crocodile Hunter, only it was somebody, you know, that had an Australian accent and was like out in the universe hunting instead of crocodiles, aliens. And it was really good. It was really funny. It was just really well done. And the actor that we had playing the lead role was just really talented. And I thought for sure that would get picked up, and it didn't. And another one was called Coven. And there's been a lot of ripoffs sort of this show now. But it was about basically, you know, teenage girls in a boarding school that were witches. And, you know, it wasn't, I don't know what to say. It wasn't like bad or anything like that. It was a really well done teenage angst kind of TV show. And I just really thought that would have gotten picked up as well, but it didn't. And maybe it was just, you know, maybe it wasn't done for the right network. Like that TV show now would be perfect for the CW network. Sci-fi at the time, Sci-Fi Channel probably thought, well, that's not really, I don't really see that being on Sci-Fi, even though it probably should have.
Okay, you also are you still part owner of Affirmative Clothing?
I am.
Which is, I mean, if anybody's watched Power Rangers, they know that was one of Billy's catchphrases. But it kind of has a double meaning for the clothing line.
For sure. Billy didn't know how to say yes or I agree, so he would always say affirmative. And so it kind of started off as a joke, Affirmative Clothing Company. But I really wanted to make sure that as a company, we were putting a positive message out into the world. And so I came up with the slogan, embrace who you are, believe in who you are, affirm who you are. That's affirmative. So that's sort of the meaning behind the clothing. Just want to make sure that people really accept who they are and feel good about themselves. And, you know, when you wear our clothing, hopefully you feel good about yourself. Our clothing's very comfortable. And, you know, it has a good meaning behind it. So that's how that all came about.
You've also, in kind of in that same vein of thought there, you've done a lot of charity work. Would you want to tell us a little bit about all the good things you've done to help other people in the role of like an affirmative?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of charities that I really support and, you know, want to work on getting the message out. And, you know, with Affirmative Clothing Company, we raised money for schools in Cambodia. You know, so that was part of one of our things. But I also, you know, am a strong supporter and believer of something called the Trevor Project, which is a anti-suicide hotline for teenagers that, you know, are maybe struggling with their sexuality or questioning their sexuality. And also, you know, there's also the National Suicide Talk Line that I also promote on just my general pages. The number is always there for people. So, you know, I understand being depressed and being frustrated and feeling like giving up. And, you know, I've lost several friends to suicide, and it's just something that I really stand behind in terms of getting people help. And I always want people to know that there is help out there for them. So that's why I'm really a strong advocate for those charities.
Let's go on a little lighter note now. you do attend a lot of events, cons and so what have you. What is the weirdest item you've had somebody ask you to sign?
Well, there's a lot of weird things, but I would say, and I don't want to make people think that it is weird though. But okay, so people have had me, the weirdest thing is I've autographed somebody's butt cheek and then they've gone and gotten my name tattooed on there permanently. So that's probably the weirdest. Also, you know, it's humbling at the same time, like that somebody relates that strongly to my character or to me as an actor, that they would want to do that to their body is interesting. It's an interesting choice. But that's, you know, happened more than once, not necessarily on the butt cheek, but I've signed people's arms, their backs, their legs, and, you know, they go and get it tattooed. So it's an interesting experience.
Wow. Yeah. I've seen that actually a few times with different celebrities. So I don't think I've ever seen it on the butt cheek.
A butt cheek?
That had to be a strange signing.
Yeah, that was the first. Oh, no, I will. Let me qualify it a little bit. It's on the upper butt cheek, so it's not like, you know. So he was able to just, you know, sort of pull his pants a little bit down, and I signed right on the top of his butt cheek.
And you were the only autograph back there, right?
As far as I know, yeah. At that time, yes. I mean, there might be more now, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least you were the first. Yeah. Okay, I have this question. I'm going to ask the last question is probably going to be take a little thought.
Okay.
Maybe you can answer it right away. Maybe not. I ask it of everybody I interview, and the answers are across the board. So I'll just go ahead and ask you right out. This question is, are you cake or pie?
Well, I mean, it's kind of tough. I guess I would have to go with, can I be gluten-free cake?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have
gluten-free. I don't really eat either of those, but if it was a cake or pie, I mean, I would be cake.
If you were forced to pick, it would be cake. You're actually in the minority. Most people do pick pie.
Really?
Yeah. So that, there you have it. If you guys can make a gluten-free cake, you can bring it to the con.
And vegan at the same time.
True, true.
I make it really difficult for people.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to, like I said, to talk to us and answer all our silly questions. I know you're very busy, so I won't keep you on the line much longer. And we look forward to seeing you in April in El Paso.
Well, I'm very excited to be coming to El Paso, so I look forward to seeing you as well. And thank you so much for talking to me today and having me at El Paso Comic Con.
It'll be our pleasure.
Awesome. Get nerdy with me. Tell me what game that you get on. Is it COD or Reef? What kind of class do you play, girl? In an RPG.